Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Do you follow the ethic of leave no trace when you head out for a hike? Most people would say, yes, of course I do. I would never drop trash or chop off tree branches. As the saying goes, I take only pictures and leave only footprints. But as NHPR's Outside In team learned in a recent episode, this seemingly simple philosophy of leave no trace is not simple at all. That people who all care deeply about the outdoors can still hold very different interpretations of what these principles mean. Today in The Exchange, leave no trace. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests. Taylor Quimby is here. He's Outside In's senior producer. He produced the episode we're going to talk about Leave No Trace. And Taylor, great to have you. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Sam Evans-Brown, host of NHPR's Outside In. By the way, that's our show about the natural world and how we use it. And Sam, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me here, too.
And also with us by phone, Bob Holdsworth. He's from Concord. He's a volunteer, state advocate, and master educator for the Leave No Trace organization. And Bob, good to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Well, good morning, and thank you.
So, Taylor, let's start with you. How do you describe Leave No Trace? You know, when I looked at it, I thought, yeah, of course I do that. I'm not going to leave my, you know, my candy wrappers on the trail. Is Leave No Trace a set of do's and don'ts? Is it a set of thou shalt nots? Is it a loose guideline? Is it strict rules? I mean, what is this?
Well, it's a few different things. And you know, to start off, you point out, it, in some ways, it's also just a slogan, sort of a one broad idea of how to go into the woods. If you get deeper into it, at first blush, it does look like a set of rules, and certainly there are things that are pretty hard and fast. You don't want to throw your trash on the side of the trail, for example. But as you dig deeper, you also find that it's a set of judgment calls that you have to make. So, for example, one of the principles of Leave No Trace is you want to stay on the trail. You don't want to be tromping around in the woods, sort of knocking stuff down. That being said, anybody who's hiked notes that if you have to go to the bathroom, you don't want to do that right on the trail. So sometimes there are these judgment calls that you have to make. And in that sense, it's less a set of black and white rules as a set of ethical judgments that you want to make to try and determine what the best practices are for the situation that you are in.
So it's not a hard and fast thing, really. You said judgment calls, which means that opens up the opportunity, doesn't it, Taylor, for people to get judgy?
It does. And I mean, I think the other thing is in terms of best practices, you know, there's obviously science to that. And science can evolve. Our thinking can change about what is the best way to keep our parks the way that we might want them. And so over the years, you might see shifts in exactly what we think is the best way to behave in the woods. And speaking of all the different interpretations, Leave No Trace is also a nonprofit organization that its mission is to teach all these principles.
When did this get started, Taylor?
Well, if you go back, you know, the early 19th century, you know, people behaved very differently in the woods. So this was a time period where, say, you wanted to go camping, you might build your own campsite, build a ditch around your tent, you might cut some of the trees for firewood. You know, it had that sort of Boy Scout survival ethic of the early 19th century. But over the 19th century, you saw just this huge increase in people going to places like Shenandoah National Park, for example. I've got this number. What is it? National Park Service had 33 million visitors in 1950. That increased to 172 million in 1970. Oh, I'm sorry. Sam is written in front of me. I keep saying 19th century. I mean 20th century. It makes up 1900s.
I was thinking, did people go camping back then? I think people were pretty happy to stay in their houses back
then. I'm terrible. I always mix that up.
Maybe they did.
There.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, there was huge, huge growth in the number of people going to national parks over just a 20-year period. And with that, you saw, you know, okay, I'm making my own campsite. Now you've got thousands of people making their own campsites. You're really going to have a big impact on these places. And so in the 70s and 80s, we started to have slogans that were sort of coming up with things that maybe you've heard of.
Pack it in, pack it out.
Pack it in, pack it out. Take only photographs, leave only footprints. And eventually you had a few different organizations, the Bureau of Land Management, the National Park Service, and the Forest Service all came together and came up with the Leave No Trace ethics.
Sam, how do you think most people, you know, just your average weekend hiker, interprets this idea of Leave No Trace? As I said in the introduction, you know, most people would say, yeah, I'm doing that.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things to say here. One is that, first of all, if there are quote-unquote problems with Leave No Trace, some of those problems come from differences in how people interpret what Leave No Trace is. Is it a set of hard rules? Is it a way of thinking in terms of how do you go outdoors and think about your impact on the outdoors? Or is it what, you know, I think the history reveals it to be, which is essentially a marketing campaign that was meant to deal with a specific set of problems in high traffic natural areas, and so if we sort of look at the history, realize that that's what it was, and then realize that there are people out there who are interpreting it as a set of black and white rules of this is what you do and don't do in the outdoors. I think that's where some of the problems come from in some of these differences in interpretation.
Well, Bob, you're an educator for the Leave No Trace organization. As I said, what's missing in the average person's understanding about what Leave No Trace really means?
Well, great, thanks. I think there's a couple of different things. Number one, and that was a great intro and a good explanation of the center and its activities, but I think for most people, they just don't know. And as far as when you say just don't know, they don't understand the cumulative effect, because that's really what we're talking about here. You know, when one person goes off trail to go to the bathroom, man, that's okay. But if everybody's going off or they're cutting new trail, now you begin to see erosion and ecological damage in fragile areas. So I think that most people don't get that aspect of, okay, everything has a shift of between fragility and resilience. And so with constant use, all of a sudden now things become fragile. So I think, number one, they don't really understand the cumulative impact and the science behind it, too. And I think that's one of the things that the center does very well, is that the science behind Leave No Trace, which they spend a lot of time and effort on, is designed to show, hey, there is a difference, you know, and we'll use one clear example. You know, bears go in the woods. Why can't my dog? Well, because bears are natural. They eat natural foods, and they actually, when they did studies on their waste and they put soil around it, lots of things grew. Not true with a dog. So,
oh, that's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, I mean, when you see that kind of thing, and things like people building cairns and streams, well, you know, yeah, I'm pretty zen too, but I think the key is that when you do that, you're disturbing these macrovertebrates, which are part of the food chain. That's ultimately going to impact the stream. In addition to, they also help keep pollution down. So, gee, by building that cairn, yeah, I get the good feeling part of it. Yet, what if you're making the stream and the river more polluted down the road because you've done that?
So you're going to have to explain to the uninitiated what that is, what that looks like, building that cairn in a stream.
Right. And I think the key is, and this is where the center stresses, the why behind the what. And I think that that's key. A lot of people will read these and interpret them as rules. No, they're guidelines. But when you understand why they're being put into place or what the actual impact is, especially when you multiply it times 100, 1,000, 2,000 or more, then you begin to see, gee, I may be causing irreparable damage to the environment, and or damage is going to, you know, cause the experience for someone else to be not as good.
Yeah.
That is trash, or even fishing. You know, if you do things such that the fish population goes down, or, you know, with dog waste in particular, if it gets into the groundwater, and all of a sudden, gee, is there an algae bloom going to be coming? What happens then? Because
Wow. Now
all recreation shut off.
So what is it, Bob, that you see most out there on the trail? I mean, you talked about dog waste. We could talk about, you know, people eating an apple on the trail and then throwing the core in the woods. And you say, well, it's biodegradable, so that's okay, right? What is it that you see most often, Bob, that really drives you crazy, where this cumulative effect could really kick in a bad way? If you could just pick one.
I would say waste, litter. I mean, I think that that's probably the number one thing, that it's not going to degrade. When you look, and one of the things we do in our discussions is we take a look at it and say, okay, how long do you think this will last? And people are so far off. And of course, in many of these things, we really don't know. How long does a bottle or a tin can last? Now, if your people are drinking beer in the woods, well, you know, they're not going to take it out to their car. But, you know, it'd be nice for them to do that and just pick up after themselves. And again, I don't think people look for it. And so therefore, it just kind of, they're blind to it. Yet, you know, once you start picking up trash, all of a sudden, you see more of it.
Yeah. Well, and it, by the way, if you're just joining us, is Leave No Trace. We're talking about that today in The Exchange. It's an outdoor ethic that a lot of people translate as simply leave nothing but footprints, take nothing but pictures when you're hiking or camping. But as NHPR's Outside In team recently discovered in a recent episode, there's a lot more to it than that. And today in The Exchange, we're following up on that work about how people interpret this philosophy aimed at finding a balance in the outdoors. Let's hear from you. We'd love your comments, questions, personal experiences when you're hiking or camping about Leave No Trace. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. One more time, the number 1-800-892-6477. So, Taylor, Bob mentioned something that you talked a ton about in this episode, and that is the idea of the cumulative effect. No, maybe it doesn't really, really matter if I throw my apple core in the woods. But if everybody who hikes up, you know, Mount Cardigan that day threw their apple core in the woods, then maybe we'd have a problem. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, one of the things he's talking about is that's a really hard effect to grapple with as an individual. And I think this translates to a lot of other environmental issues that we talk about, climate change, things like this. It's hard to look at your own small impacts and be able to magnify that outwards and know exactly what you're doing.
I myself, by the way, have thrown my apple core in the woods. I feel bad now.
Well, in the episode, you'll hear, you know, so I've learned to eat the entire apple, but I tend to spit out the seeds. I don't like the way they crunch. And, you know, there's this question of, okay, where is the line?
Like I would never throw a banana peel or an orange peel, but an apple core feels okay.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that Bob was talking about is that there are studies that show that it does take a longer time than you might imagine for some of those biodegradable things to biodegrade, even in the woods. That being said, I think there is a central question that understands, you know, when we go out into the trails, when we go out into the forest, we have an impact. Our footsteps have an impact. Our existence there does. So we know that there's kind of a tension between the fact that we want to be able to enjoy the outdoors and yet we want to preserve it. So where do we draw that line?
Right.
And you know, for different people, sometimes they draw that line in different places. This isn't to say that there's, you know, necessarily a right or wrong way that I'm putting out there. But in the story, I spoke to a lot of people, and they had different ideas. You know, you'd have very environmentally conscious folks who agreed with you maybe that, you know, every now and again, I'm going to throw my apple core. And if I really toss it far, it's not going to be next to the trail.
I'm not going to do it now.
Yeah,
they would
work their own logic in a way,
right,
to be able to figure out what is their own line.
Right.
Now, I think Leave No Trace as an organization would probably have a much harder line on something like apple cores than what we're discussing. But it is interesting to get out there and see a lot of Leave No Trace oriented folks who are willing to play in the margins on specific issues that are important to them. A good one maybe that you mentioned is dogs.
Hiking with your dogs.
Right.
Does it follow the principle of Leave No Trace to hike with your dog? Your dog's going to have an impact. Bob talked about waste. Your dog, in addition to leaving waste, might disturb wildlife. That's a no-no under Leave No Trace. This is very fraught territory, Sam.
Exactly. So I've actually spoken to some environmental advocates over the course of my reporting for other stories who say, you know, I really think that there need to be natural areas that are set aside strictly for the animals, that we're not going to have recreation in these areas. And specifically, they've said, it's not the people so much, it's the dogs. and you know, and there's good academic academic work to back this up that shows, you know, different animals have different, quote unquote, alarm distances. So this is the distance at which you walk by them and they startle and they fly out. And that costs, you know, for birds or for deer or whatever it is, that costs them energy. And that's energy that they have to recoup somehow. So there's
stressful for them.
Exactly. And so this is there. We have data. We know what the alarm distances are for all these different species. And the studies have shown that, in fact, animals are more frightened of dogs than they are of people, probably justifiably, because sometimes dogs will chase them.
Yeah.
And so this is this interesting question. So why is that okay? Why is it okay to go hiking with your dog, but it's not okay to, you know, say to let the dog poop in the woods and to let that biodegrade? And these are all sort of judgment calls that the Leave No Trace organization has had to make in the crafting of this ethic that is, you know, it can be at times a little muddy as to what the rules are.
And I should jump in and say that as far as dogs and Leave No Trace, Leave No Trace will talk about at least obeying the park rules in any given place. So if there are no dogs allowed, for example, on Mount Monadnock, then Leave No Trace.
Because it's a state park.
Correct. Leave No Trace would say that you should follow those rules. And even then, if dogs are allowed, that they should stay on leash, which I think is just another one of those points of tension. I know some folks who really, really dislike the rock stacking that Bob mentioned, this sort of Zen stacking of rocks where they pull big stones from a river and they just stack them up into sort of an aesthetically pleasing sculpture. I've talked to some folks who hate the rock stacking but are big dog lovers and let their dogs off leash. And so they're even
so
sort of
pick and choose according to what works for them.
Exactly.
Bob, in terms of New Hampshire, there are several, you know, places that people often complain are being loved to death. And I just wonder how Leave No Trace fits into that fear, Bob, about, you know, places being loved to death, super popular hikes. Specifically, Mount Major, the Forest Society says Mount Major has been designated as the very first Leave No Trace hotspot. What is that going to mean for Mount Major? That's a very popular hike.
Right. It absolutely is. I think actually the studies show that it's the second most climbed mountain in New Hampshire right after Monadnock.
Oh, wow.
So one thing, too, just and I'll get to that in a second. But and it had been mentioned about the dogs on leash. One of the other parts of the study of that, though, is they show that when dogs are kept on leash, even in those areas where they are allowed, that the owner tends to be more diligent about picking up their waste. And I think that's one of the big reasons why there's a lot more activity on that, is to try to say, okay, hey, you know, it's closer to the trail, therefore I see it, and of course somebody might step in it, I'll pick it up.
Sure.
So I think that's one aspect of it. Now, specifically, that ties also into Mount Major. Because of the usage that's there, the number one thing you see always is litter. I mean, in the parking lot, I mean, literally underneath the sign, the kiosk, it says, you know, please pick up, you know, pack it in, pack it out. People leave things, or they'll leave them in the restrooms or the porta potties that they have there. So litter is the number one thing there. Dogs is a close second. And then part of it is also the overcrowding in terms of people walking up the trail with boom boxes blaring. So what Leave No Trace has is this hotspot program. And the hotspot program, there's only 18 or 19 per year. They're week-long events where a group of what they call the traveling trainers, and these are experts in it, will come out and they're going to provide some, you know, in-depth consulting and education to volunteers. They'll help organize community projects. They're going to do other activities on site such that the people will get a better sense of what are some of the principles and what's that cumulative impact. And I'll use a good example. At one park, they had an issue with dog waste. So a group went out and they took red flags and they put them in every piece, every dog waste that they found. And then when the park opened, people walked around and went, what are all those red flags?
Oh, kind of raising people's awareness. Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I see that effect and now I understand it. So, you know, going back to the aspects with Mount Major, it is heavily used trail erosion. And so this is just going to provide a lot more concerted resources and to a group of volunteers, because the Belknap Range Group does a terrific job.
So it's an opportunity for education on a heavily used mountain.
Absolutely. Education for them, education with the Forest Society, and education for volunteers who also have that same care and concern that these places need to be protected And that's not a hard, fast rule.
I need to just jump in for a real quick sec, Bob, there, and let people know that you are listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. So go ahead, Bob, an opportunity for education about Mount Major.
Yes. And I think that, you know, again, that's the number one aspect of it. So you're going to get the skill set. You're going to promote that these are issues. And here's, a terrific mountain. If you've never gone, it's the million-dollar view from the top as it looks over Winnipesaukee. And that's why it's so crowded. So how do you get that word out? Again, they're just trying to mobilize and educate and inform. But as they do, the message is going to be very clear to talk about why these are so important, not only for preserving the land, but also making sure down the road ecologically that the same things we like to see in terms of, you know, trees and nature are going to be there in a way that everybody can appreciate.
Well, Bob, I want to just let Sam and Taylor jump in here for a second. And Sam, to you, where does Leave No Trace come up a lot in New Hampshire? And Bob's telling us about Mount Major, very popular. Where else do you see people sort of griping about Leave No Trace?
Well, I think this gets to what Leave No Trace was initially developed as a response to. So we hear about people complaining about the impact of, typically complaining about the impact of other hikers. You rarely complain about your own impact.
Right.
But in high-use natural areas. So Mount Major is a perfect example. Mount Monadnock is a perfect example. The Lincoln-Lafayette Loop up in Franconia Notch is a perfect example. These are places where there are a lot of folks using a space that is supposed to feel like wilderness. And feel like, I'll sort of emphasize that, because Leave No Trace, a lot of the rules, you know, so Bob mentioned boom boxes. Those appear to really annoy him. A lot of these rules are not actually... They're largely about preserving a sort of aesthetic experience of what wilderness is supposed to feel like, as opposed to an actual impact. Obviously, we mentioned alarm distances with animals, so like boomboxes do scare animals, sure. But a lot of the gripes that people have, for instance, large groups. You'll hear gripes about large groups a lot. That really comes down to people not liking to see a lot of people when they're out in a space that's supposed to be natural. And so I think that this is a good moment to sort of bring up, you know, I'll say that I think that Leave No Trace is an important tool for these types of high-use natural areas to sort of preserve them, as Bob was talking about. But as sort of a philosophy as an ethos, I think there are two really important critiques of Leave No Trace that we have to bring up. And the first I'm going to say is the trouble with wilderness, which is that it creates sort of a separation between natural spaces and unnatural spaces. And we act in two different ways in these natural and unnatural spaces. And I think bagging dog waste is a really good example. So is putting dog waste in a plastic bag and then throwing it into a landfill actually a good environmental outcome? And I think that sure, it does keep that natural space that you're trying to enjoy as a natural space more pristine.
It doesn't contaminate the local waterways and so forth.
Sure, but then the question of what is the impact of our waste system as a whole, and also throwing biodegradable things into our waste, our landfills, what is that impact? And I think that's an important thing to draw. And we'll talk about the other one after the break.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break. And Bob Holdsworth, we're going to let you go, but we will talk again, because there's a lot more we could have talked about with you this morning. Thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
That's Bob Holdsworth. He's from Concord. He's a volunteer state advocate and master educator for the Leave No Trace organization. And coming up after a break, a lot more to cover, including this holistic view that Sam is raising there. We'll start taking your questions and comments, too. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a 6-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, Leave No Trace. It's an outdoor ethic many translate as leave nothing but footprints, pick nothing but pictures. But as explored in a recent episode of NHPR's Outside In, different people interpret this philosophy very differently. It's far from simple. Let's hear from you. How do you practice Leave No Trace when you're out hiking or camping? Are there applications of this that you think are extreme that might discourage people from enjoying nature? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. With me in studio, Sam Evans-Brown, host of NHPR's Outside In. That's our show about the natural world and how we use it. Taylor Quimby is also here. He's a senior producer for the show. He produced the episode that we're talking about today on Leave No Trace. And joining us now from Colorado is Gregory Simon. He's an associate professor in the Department of Geography and Environmental Sciences at the University of Colorado, Denver. And Gregory Simon, great to have you too. Thank you for being with us.
Great. Good to be here.
Well, Greg, we talked about this earlier, but I'd love to hear from you too on this. What does Leave No Trace encompass for you? Because, you know, it can be sort of a limited set of thou shalt nots in the woods, or it can be a very large environmental ethic. And I just wonder what you think.
Right. Well, I think that's a great question. I think on the one hand, it does have sort of a very explicit or specific meaning in terms of people's travel in the backcountry and in, you know, kind of nature and walking around and trying to do that as lightly and without as big of an impact as possible. So for me, I mean, as I sort of introduced to the concept of Leave No Trace, that was certainly what it meant to me. But as I've thought more about it, I've begun to realize that it does encompass sort of a larger set of environmental ethics. And I think for me, it really reflects the environmental ethics of the 60s and 70s and 80s around this kind of idea of a wilderness ethic, which is that there are areas around the world that we're trying to protect that are under threat from kind of human influence. And Leave No Trace really kind of fits really well with that environmental ethic insofar as it's done quite well to protect our national parks, national forests, wilderness areas, et cetera.
So protect those natural areas, but what about extending it to the rest of our lives? Like, you know, okay, so I can do all the Leave No Trace when I that I want when I'm out and about, but if I'm, you know, I don't know, behaving wastefully at home, am I really practicing Leave No Trace? I wonder what you think.
Sure, yeah, and I think this comes back to the intended goals of Leave No Trace. I mean, the intended goals of Leave No Trace really was to serve, as has been discussed on the show, you know, serve as an ethic to protect these kind of more wild locations. But you're right, over time we've begun to realize that those aren't the only types of natural environments worth protecting, and that, you know, this idea and ethic of Leave No Trace really should extend further into our lives, into our homes, into the kind of urban sphere. So everything from protecting and thinking, you know, thinking about the importance of protecting our, you know, neighborhood park, you know, as much as we should be protecting, you know, a national park, and kind of comparing those two natural places, I think has become more prominent, and I think more people have begun to realize the importance of the nature that we actually see every day, you know, in our daily lives close to home. And I think you make a good point also about extending this idea into our practices as, you know, consumers and trying to recycle and trying to leave no trace in ways that are much, much bigger and broader than just, you know, backcountry environment.
It's really interesting, Taylor. I love your thoughts, too. You know, we started out talking about leave no trace. Sure, don't throw your trash on the trail. I learned not to throw my apple core into the woods. You and Sam talked about maybe it's not so much leave no trace to bring your dog hiking because it's disturbing to wildlife. But what about what Gregory is telling us, that it can be, for some people, even bigger than being ethical when you're out hiking?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's something interesting to thinking about, I suppose, environmental ethics in general, but Leave No Trace specifically, as something that evolves perhaps as you become more familiar with it and as you grow up even. So, you know, we've talked to a few different people who will discuss, you know, you've really got to cater your Leave No Trace discussion to the person you're talking about and the level that they're at. You know, one of the Leave No Trace principles is really about minimizing campfire impacts, and the best way to minimize them is to have none, you know, to not have a campfire.
Okay, but you can't take kids camping and not have a campfire.
Right, so if you're talking to...
Because it's all about the s'mores.
Exactly, if you're talking to kids, and this is their first introduction to,
right,
isn't it great to be outdoors, you want to teach them maybe how to have a responsible campfire that lets them have the s'more, but also, you know, doesn't involve chopping down all the nearby trees just to get, a, you know, a big raging fire. So at a young level, maybe you're just talking about how to behave in a certain responsible way and still get what we want, quote unquote. As you get a little older, maybe you start to think about these nuanced pieces about, you know, is feeding gray jays, against Leave No Trace. These are birds that you'll often find in the top of the mountains in the White Mountains.
Okay, I thought you're not supposed to feed anything anywhere in terms of wildlife.
And here's do you have a bird feeder at home?
No.
But many people
I do.
And many people do, and they don't consider that to be problematic. But yet, if you're on top of a mountain and you feed a bird, that is considered to be problematic. And so this is an instance of what we were just hearing about, this sort of separation between an ethic for the backcountry, but a different ethic for the front country, and why that might be in itself a problem. And so sorry, I interrupted you, Taylor.
No, it's interesting.
But I guess the point is that as you start to think more about the places that we're in and how we have impacts as we're in them, your thinking evolves. And what I think Gregory is talking about is that next level of, okay, I've been responsibly hiking, I've been doing the best, but, you know, when I'm at home, do I need to buy all this new equipment? Do I, you know, there's other sort of ideas that might start coming into your Leave No Trace ethic that aren't taking place on the mountain, that don't begin when you hit the trail.
I want to talk specifically about kids. This is a particular interest of mine and also a broader concern for our society that, you know, our kids have nature deficit disorder. They don't like to get outside. And Gregory, to you first, you know, there's been a lot written about Leave No Trace and whether it's too restrictive for kids. You know, kids love to do stuff in nature. I know when mine were younger, they'd love to get off the trail and climb rocks. When we would camp, they would build forts. Yeah, they like to splash in the streams. I'm going to get all sorts of emails after this saying, how could you let them do that? But that was fun for them. If you tell them, Gregory, to put their hands in their pockets and don't touch anything and stay on the trail and stay on the campsite and don't explore, not fun. Thanks, right. Mom. I'd rather stay home. So how do you balance Leave No Trace with imbuing kids with a love of the outdoors?
Right. I completely agree. Totally unrealistic expectation for young kids. My kids don't go anywhere without leaving a trace. I completely agree with you. And I think you're right. This kind of lost child in the woods kind of idea, nature deficit disorder, is, I think, a very useful concept. I think, you know, again, in an increasingly urbanized, developed world, we got to remember our connection to nature. That's all fine. But at the same time, we sort of offer that message. And that message comes along with a message of, okay, but you can't go over here. You can't do that. You can't touch this. Be careful. You know, don't stay out too long. Stay close to home. And it's a contradictory message. And I think that you're right. There is something to be said about not just about thinking about wild landscapes, but thinking about the wildness of children and the wildness of especially young individuals who really need to explore without being inhibited by what they can do, within reason, obviously. But I think this is a problem. I personally feel like, you know, Leave No Trace as an environmental ethic, on the one hand, is restrictive. But on the other hand, it does instill a sense of kind of conservation, you know, sort of an environmental ethic that allows them to understand that, you know, there are consequences to the things that we do. And so I think it's really up to the parent or the camp counselor, whoever it is, to try to balance that, you know, to say, look, our goal is not to present you with nature as a place in which you have to be restricted and inhibited and held back, but also understand that you can't just do whatever you want with, as if there aren't consequences. And it's actually a really nice laboratory to teach students about the consequences of their actions.
Well, got a couple of emails that I would love to share with all of you, so let's go to them. Again, our address is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. We'd love your thoughts, questions, comments, personal experiences about this philosophy that we're talking about, Leave No Trace. And all of you, Rick in Berlin says, in my many years of outdoor endeavors, the most offensive and condescending individuals I have ever interacted with are the Leave No Trace Nazis. That's Rick's words, not mine, who feel it is the mission in life to act as the self-proclaimed backcountry environmental police. Rick says, I'm a fairly low-impact outdoorsman and have little use for these types who just hurt their own cause by turning people off. Taylor, I'm going to you because you really dug into this in the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's two points to make. One is that, you know, when we're talking about Leave No Trace, it can be hard to, but important to, divide between the sorts of impacts that we're talking about that have this cumulative effect, and these other impacts that might really be about an aesthetic experience, which is a little harder to come down on because we're talking about subjective ideas about how we want to behave in the woods. You know, a lot of people talk about, I like to go in the mountains and have a solitary experience or
then
a feeling of solitude.
Then you need to go on a Wednesday.
Well, or go to a low-use trail.
Right. Exactly. I mean, the thing is if you want to go Lincoln Lafayette on a weekend in the summer, it's a delusion to think that you can have a solitary experience. And even if everybody was very, very quiet and respectful, I mean, you're going to be surrounded by dozens or hundreds or maybe thousands of people if you stay on that trail over
their dogs.
And their
dogs.
Which
you should stay on the trail because as you and Sam talk about, and Sam, I'll turn to you on this, you know, people say, oh, Lincoln Lafayette, Monadnock's being loved to death.
Right.
You know, the trail's so crowded. But you say in the episode, crowded trails are actually a good thing.
Crowded trails are a sign of success of this this practice of trying to minimize impact in natural areas, right?
People aren't bushwhacking.
Because one of the primary strategies is if we want to get lots of people outside, which many environmental advocates do want to do because that's how you get people to actually love the outdoors by getting lots of people outside, you need to concentrate the impact. So lots of people on a single trail is actually very consistent with Leave No Trace. And yet it is something that many people who are seeking the solitary experience that we were just talking about don't enjoy. And so I'd say that if there are two critiques that I find two very substantive critiques of Leave No Trace. The first is this sort of separation between natural and unnatural areas and how we act in the two of them, which you talked about. The other is, which Gregory alluded to, is this last child in the woods, right? Which is that if you want people to love the outdoors, they have to enjoy the outdoors. And so for kids, for instance, they have to come at the outdoors in a way that they're able to enjoy it. And I would expand that beyond kids and also to people who've never been outdoors before. Leave No Trace can be somewhat alienating to those people as well, because if you tell them, stay in the woods, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, they might not enjoy their time outdoors, in which case you might have lost an adherent, someone who might have become somebody who could champion your causes in the future. And so it's this idea of sort of we're winning the battle, right? Like we've kept this trail pristine, but you're losing the war because more and more people don't want to go outside because they've encountered these quote unquote Leave No Trace Nazis.
Well, Rick, thank you very much for the email. Here's another one from Lou in Walpole. I was the New Hampshire State Advocate for Leave No Trace before handing over the reins to Bob Holdsworth, who was on earlier. I'd like to hear comments, Lou says, shared about the impact of social media and the increased use of our public lands. Lou, thank you so much because this comes up, Taylor. Some Leave No Trace advocates say Leave No Trace has to include responsible use of social media when you're in the great outdoors. How can taking pretty pictures of, the view off Lincoln Lafayette fold into Leave No Trace?
I don't know that I can easily comment on this. I mean, I think I mean, maybe there are critiques, and I haven't read too much about the use of social media in terms of how it would directly impact a landscape, except that it would make it more popular, which I don't think is inherently against Leave No Trace, as Sam was saying.
You know,
we want to concentrate impacts. So if somebody takes a beautiful selfie on top of Lincoln Lafayette and then 10 other people see that and say, well, I want to go there. That looks gorgeous. That's not technically a problem, I think. I think this gets into an idea that people don't want to see everybody taking selfies on top of the mountain, maybe. Maybe Gregory, do you hear something that you want to mention about social media?
I'm just going to say very quickly, I mean, to me, I think maybe the bigger problem is the use of technology overtly in these wild places. And I think that for many people, these landscapes really do provide a space to kind of get away, to put away your phone, to put away the radio and all the noise. And so when people are out there taking selfies and kind of flashing their camera, organizing crowds of people on the top of peaks to take photos, that might seem disruptive to them. But I'll also just add that I think that social media also provides, not necessarily as applied in backcountry settings, but as a forum, I think it's useful as a forum through which people who might otherwise feel intimidated to get involved in these activities, particularly women and minority groups, have a place they can sort of maybe talk to one another and, speak, because there are actually, these social media groups out there that exist that are meant to get people interested in the outdoors. And I think in that respect, it could serve a really positive role.
You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Did you want to jump in, Sam?
Yeah, I just think that this is a perfect example. Like when we hear the word overuse,
There are times in which there are trails that are being overused. There are trails that have not been designed for the amount of traffic that is on them. I think actually Mount Major is a perfect example of this. It's a, you know, it was a fall line trail. Many people have come to it. It is very eroded. It wasn't designed for the traffic that it attracted. But then a lot of times overuse is actually code for someone who's saying there are more people on a trail than I want to see. I'm not having the type of experience that I want to have. And so then that gets to this other aspect of Leave No Trace that I found really interesting to dig into, which is this idea that it's kind of a normative set of rules. And then you have to ask yourself whenever a set of norms are being created and imposed, is who is creating these norms?
Like Rick from Berlin, who emailed earlier, who
right.
said that Leave No Trace, quote unquote, Nazis drive him crazy.
Right, exactly. And so are these norms actually serving the greater public, or are they serving the needs of the people who created them? And are they really just maintaining spaces in a way that the people who traditionally use them like them, or are they you know, actually opening them to
right.
to the broader populace?
And I think that's what Gregory is saying here. And sorry to maybe jump in and speak for you, but there's a lot of exclusivity that comes with outdoor communities and outdoor recreational communities in a historical perspective. And sometimes if you do want it to be a more diverse and inclusive space, that might mean having to rethink some of the ideas about how people like to use them, because if you own it in one way, you might be shutting the doors for a lot of other people.
Gregory, what do you think?
Yeah, that was really what I was going to say as well. I think that, you know, this is, the outdoors has traditionally served a particular population. It's been primarily used by sort of, white individuals, a lot of men traditionally. And I think the goal for outdoor recreation enthusiasts, people like me, is to really see how more people can access and then appreciate really the benefits that come from exploring these backcountry environments. And you're right, there's a sense that there's sort of an exclusive nature to backcountry travel, whereby certain actions, certain, clothing, certain behavior, certain, appearances might be deemed sort of not worthy and thus worthy of critique by other people. And I don't think that's the way we really want backcountry travel to go.
It's so interesting, though, Gregory, so everybody listening is probably saying, yeah, of course, we want to get, as many people as possible. But we don't want them to travel in large groups. We don't want them to be noisy. We don't want them to bring their, for example, I know certain teenagers who will remain unnamed that, they always like to bring their rap music with them wherever they go. Well, if I'm hiking, I really don't want to listen to rap music. Nothing against rap music, but it's just not what I want to do. So, it's one thing, Sam, to say, we want everybody out there, but not that kind of people out there.
Right. But then you have to ask yourself, what if being able to listen to rap music on the trail
right.
means that there's a huge chunk of the population that is currently not valuing
exactly.
the outdoors might value the outdoors.
Right.
And so, again, winning the battle, but losing the war. I want to throw a caveat on all of this, which is that I have been a wilderness trip leader. I have taught Leave No Trace. I think it's a valuable set of practices that does exactly what it says it's supposed to do, which is maintain these high-use natural areas in a way that feels natural and preserves that experience of a natural space for other people. I think that my plea here is for the practitioners of Leave No Trace to think a little bit more critically about how they're applying it and if they're actually accomplishing their goals in the way they're applying it.
So there's some science behind some of these Leave No Trace principles, like animals being disturbed, like don't do certain things near the water supply. But then there's other things you're saying, Sam, that are more philosophical and judgy.
Yeah, some science, but exercise a little bit of tact as well.
All right. We will talk a lot more after a short break, and we'll keep taking your emails. So keep them coming in, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, Leave No Trace, a recent episode of NHPR's Outside In, examines how there's a lot more to this outdoor ethic than don't disturb nature when you're hiking or camping, that well-meaning people can really disagree about what Leave No Trace should be. Let's get you into our conversation. What do you think Leave No Trace should be all about, and what might be extreme in terms of its application? We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. With us from Colorado, Gregory Simon, Associate Professor in the Department of Geography and Environmental Science at the University of Colorado, Denver. With me in studio, Taylor Quimby. He's Senior Producer at Outside In. He produced the episode that we're talking about on Leave No Trace. And host Sam Evans Brown is here as well. Again, Outside In is our show about the natural world and how we use it. Again, our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, I have to say, lots of emails about whether you should bring your dog into the woods again. And people love, love, love to hike with their dogs. But as you all explained earlier, you got to pick up that dog waste, and also dogs do disturb wildlife. So Keith tweeted us to say regarding red flags marking dog waste. Somebody talked earlier about how this was a project that volunteers did just to alert people to how extensive it is. Keith says, I saw this at a park I frequent. Now our park is littered with dog waste and single-use plastic waste in the form of these bits up, torn up plastic ribbon. Dog waste makes me angry. Single-use plastic is worse. Wow, Keith. And Joe from Loudoun also sent us an email. He says, great discussion, but let's talk about Mount Major. I call it Dog Poop Mountain. yikes. You know, we haven't gotten you in on this yet, Gregor. We talked about it earlier in the show when you weren't with us. This is very fraught for Leave No Trace because a lot of hardcore hikers, you know, love hiking with the dog.
Right. And I'm actually a new dog owner, so I haven't actually taken the dogs out yet. I'm deciding whether or not I should, and this conversation might sway me one direction or the other. And it's a similar, obviously, problem in Colorado and California, where I've done a lot of hiking as well. For me, you know, I don't have a sort of like hard line kind of opinion on this. I do understand there have been times where, for example, I've been hiking in somewhat icy conditions, and a dog has like scurried, you know, past me and almost knocked me off the side of the. Obviously unintentionally, but no one's knocked me off the side of the mountain because it was icy conditions. So that was very disconcerting. And then when it comes to the dog poop, yeah, that's obviously a problem. For me, I always, when I think about it, I also think about it in the context of horse travel and horse packing, which is quite popular out west, where you also have these, you know, piles of horse poop as well littering the trail. And horses themselves pulverize, you know, the trail, the dirt, almost make it sandy in a lot of places. And so, and there are limitations on those, on that kind of travel. On the other hand, horse travel is quite popular. There are areas where that's seen a lot, but there's clearly a significant trace that's left by horse packing. But that's sort of supported by a pretty long-standing tradition and kind of, you know, packing industry that supports that kind of travel. And dogs, on the other hand, seem like a much lighter impact on the landscape, but yet they're banned from a lot of the same places that horses are allowed. So I just throw that in as another wrench to kind of complicate the conversation about horses and dogs and what's allowed where.
Well, that's a whole other episode that Outside In could do if you haven't done yet already. You know, and it's interesting, Taylor, this gets back to the sort of meta stuff that we started with. You know, we're talking about, like, should you or shouldn't you? Should you bring your dog or not? Should you bring, you know, loud music or not? You know, would that get people into the woods who normally wouldn't get into the woods? But you said earlier, you know, Leave No Trace, yes, it's a set of rules. Yes, it's a set of principles. Yes, some of those are backed up by science and others are more sort of a philosophy. But it's also just an educational tool, and I'd love to hear more from you on that.
Yeah, well, there's an understanding even when it was created that if you want to both allow access to and conserve natural spaces, that's actually really hard to do through things other than education. So, for example, enforcement. If you set a bunch of rules, well, now you're talking about big wild spaces, backcountry. It's hard to enforce those rules when we're talking about the woods. There are other issues in terms of the number of people that you have to do law enforcement and that sort of thing. And so Leave No Trace, there was an understanding that the best way to allow people to come into these spaces is if we can educate them, if they can become the Leave No Tracers who also want to be stewards of these shared environments. And with that in mind, you know, any of the rules or principles that we're talking about, if you behave, as the emailer said, like a LNT Nazi, if you turn people away from the Leave No Trace principles because you point the finger in such a way that makes them feel bad or just makes them feel angry with you, then potentially you're doing harm to the Leave No Trace concept, because it's not just about being right. It's also about getting people on board, if you know what I mean. And with that in mind, you know, we spoke in our episode with Jeff Marion, who is with the U.S. Geological Survey, and he is one of those, you know, folks who actually helped develop the principles in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, he said, I have to make judgment calls. When do I point something out? When do I come down on someone and try and gently say, you know, this is not something we should do? And when do I let it go? Because there's going to be moments where the impact, it's the wrong time for the lesson. Does that make sense? You know, he specifically said he brings a group of it's like a Girl Scout program, a group of kids out into these wilderness adventures. And, you know, they were out and the girls were listening to a boombox. This is one of the examples that everybody seems to come down on. But they were in the middle of nowhere. There was no one around. And he said, is now the time to tell this group of girls who are all enjoying this music
right.
that they shouldn't listen to music in the wilderness? And he chose not to. And then they came and saw some folks, and he said, now's the time. Okay, now we're actually impacting a different person's experience. Now we're going to have that conversation. But he had to pick and choose, and this is a guy who's, you know, at the forefront of creating the Leave No Trace concept.
Stephanie sent us an email on something we talked about earlier. She says, on the topic of social media and technology in wild places, I think it's important to mention geotagging, which happens when an influencer on Instagram or wherever tags a specific place with a very curated photo, and then flocks of people try to find that same spot to get that same popular photo. She continues, I think it's part of the responsibility of the person with the huge social media following to be aware of their impact and be careful of when and how they are tagging their posts to keep people seeking wild places for the right reasons and with the right research, aside from seeing it on social media. Stephanie says, I'm involved with trail work with the AMC, and I'm happy to hear this is becoming more of a mainstream topic as New Hampshire gets more and more visitors to its wild places. We talked about social media earlier, but I'd like to get your thoughts, Gregory, on Stephanie's comment. I can kind of hear Sam's wheels moving, like on the one hand, yeah, you don't want to get a million people in this one spot, but on the other hand, it's great that people are looking at these Instagram photos and going, oh, that's so pretty. I want to hike there, too. So what do you think, Gregory?
Yeah, well, I think those are both legitimate, you know, kind of takes on the situation. You know, from my perspective, I think that those types of activities and kind of identifying locations and people want to kind of repeat that photo, I generally think that's fine. And part of the reason why I sort of have a more lenient take on that is because it seems a little bit contradictory to be coming down on the use of cell phones and other kind of geocaching devices when, you know, people are walking in there with all sorts of technologies that aren't commonly referenced. So, I mean, all of the clothes we're wearing, all of the equipment, the backpacks, the tents, the stoves, everything else, we're walking with a whole host of technologies that oftentimes get overlooked when talking about Leave No Trace. So, you know, to come down hard on one technology seems a bit unfair. And I understand the concern about sort of concentrating in one place, but generally speaking, our impacts as kind of consumers of technologies run quite large, and our impacts on the environment are much bigger than actually our impacts in the backcountry environment. And so, if I may just take 1 second to kind of make my appeal that something that I've been talking a lot about, which is this idea of Leave No Trace being extended beyond the backcountry setting.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And actually, David, I just want to jump in for a second and invite David from Manchester to join us. He's on the line. Go ahead, David. Welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning. Go ahead.
I feel you spent most of the hour making excuses for people who are not environmentally friendly up here, calling the Leave No Trace people Nazis repeatedly for 40 minutes of this broadcast.
Okay, that was an emailer, you know, by the way, David. That was not us. It was Rick and Berlin who sent us an
email. You've repeated the phrase and used it, so you've adopted it basically this morning.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
What makes New Hampshire different from Massachusetts is that people back in the day used to really care about the environment and take care of it. So you would find some portions where people didn't do that. But in the state parks, what sets New Hampshire apart from Massachusetts, and that has been the fact that the trails have been treated better. In fact, I would suggest that people take out garbage with them when they go camping. Bring out more leave it better than you find it was the Boy Scout philosophy we learned growing up in New Hampshire. So I would think that would be the goal. So instead of making excuses for people who don't want to listen to someone else's radio or television or social media when they're in the mountain, or want to have a nice clean stream or a well-tended trail, Leave No Trace is a great philosophy and shouldn't be mocked. Thank you.
Well, yeah, and I'm sorry you feel like we were mocking it, David. We absolutely were not, but I'm sorry that it came across that way to you. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think I'll sort of reiterate what I said earlier in the hour, which is that Leave No Trace is a very functional set of practices for places that David was referencing. So state parks, national parks, high use areas in which there are a lot of people using these trails, in which you do want to maintain this wilderness experience. And what we've, I think, been trying to do with this hour is point out some of the ways in which Leave No Trace can have the opposite effect of what you're hoping, which is to get people to protect and care about the environment. And I think that if I were to make one suggestion is that there's sort of a place for everything, right? So an example of what I might be meaning here is that so in Sweden, for instance, they have areas that are designated as natural play zones where kids are allowed to just go make forts. They're allowed to run around in the woods. And there isn't this concern about the traces that those kids are leaving. But this isn't the entire country. You're not allowed to do this in the national parks, for instance. There are specific spots where.
Oh, that's
where,
interesting.
Yeah. And so kids are allowed to be kids. They're allowed to develop a love and connection with nature without being scolded for traces that they're leaving. But then, you sort of gradually educate them about their impacts on the land so that when they're in other spaces where Leave No Trace might be applicable and useful, they're prepared to care enough about the outdoors to actually follow those principles as opposed to finding them alienating.
A very passionate call there, Gregory, from David in Manchester. And David, I hope you're still listening. I do feel badly that he thinks we were mocking Leave No Trace. We were absolutely not doing that. We were talking about how it, to some people, can feel overdone. But a lot of passion in his voice and a lot of care for the environment there, Gregory. And I just wonder what you think.
Yeah, I think that I can, I know we did not intend to make that message. I can see how it might have been perceived that way. I think that, for me, I think that the reason why, I think that Leave No Trace has been extremely successful as an educational program. And I think when you walk around backcountry settings, you see how successful it's been. I mean, it's amazing how well-kept many of these places are. Now, there are high concentration areas like hiking, summits where a lot of people are hiking, where the trail is damaged. But generally speaking, it's done a really good job. And I don't think we want to diminish that and sort of underreport its importance. I think, to be honest with you, I think that when you are speaking with children, for example, it is not mutually exclusive to say, look, this is a place to have fun, but at the same time, this is a place where we're going to talk about, the importance of, treating nature really carefully and treading lightly. And I think both of those things can be done effectively together.
Okay, we will wrap it up there, Gregory. It was really nice to have you on the show. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks.
That's Gregory Simon, associate professor in the Department of Geography and Environmental Sciences at the University of Colorado, Denver, and Sam Evans Brown, Taylor Quimby, thank you both very much for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.